Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025. The game, it's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's also a black t-shirt Friday if you're watching on the live stream. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are you?
Ian is here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, guys.
So we have a loaded show on the Preds today. Adam Vingan for the entire 4 o'clock hour. Corey Curtis as well. News 2, loaded show. Jason Fitz later this hour. Again, loaded. Predators and Canes. By the way, did you guys see the Carolina Hurricanes? The Carolina governor, the North Carolina governor. The North Carolina governor today changed restrictions so they can have, 12,000 fans in the arena for Game 1 Monday night. I wonder where they came up with 12,000 fans.
The number sounds familiar.
It's a very odd number that they just randomly picked 12,000. But so, anywho, that's where they are. I want to start on this, though, and it's probably the news of the day surrounding the Predators and the Hurricanes series, and it's what John Hines said on Robbie and Rex Road. So Joe asked a question about lineups and whatnot, and he asked about Elli Tolvanen. Now, maybe I was just wrong for making an assumption, but we live in a society now, cable news. And I tweeted this out earlier. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I tweeted this out. I find cable news to just be ridiculous. I think it's bad for America on both sides. You can watch one cable news channel, and they will sit there and tell you that COVID is the worst thing that ever happened and that it's still here, and everybody lock your doors, and if you're not vaccinated, you're a terrible person. You can watch another channel, and they'll tell you that you're a terrible person if you wear a mask. I don't like wearing a mask. I've been vaccinated. I'm not going to tell somebody else who doesn't wear a mask they're a terrible person. I'm just not going to do that. Okay? Everything in cable news is you're dumb, you're an idiot, you're crazy, you're this, you're corrupt. And I don't think most people are like that. I feel like we have lost the ability as a society to just disagree with somebody, to just hear something they say and say, I don't agree with that. It's like it's turned into now it's an assault. It's like, you like popcorn? You're an idiot. That's what I feel like we've become. So John Hines was talking about Elli Tolvanen on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. And he said something that I kind of disagree with. And it involves Elli Tolvanen. Here's what he said.
You know, I think he was, he really got some traction there and then he got hurt. And then since he's come back off his injury, I know he's working and trying. We're working with him. But, you know, he hasn't had the same impact as he's had 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, you know, I think it's the combination of the coaches trying to help the player, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to the player being able to play at a level that we feel he's going to be able to help us win. So, you know, that'll be a decision we'll have to make whether he's in or out.
Okay. I heard that, and my head popped up this morning at like 7:41 whenever John Hines said it. My head popped up. Clearly, as he said, it's going to be a hard decision whether he is in or out. Basically, John Hines is considering scratching Elli Tolvanen for Game 1. And a lot of people would probably look at what Hines said and take it with face value. That is, that Elli Tolvanen simply hasn't been the same player since he returned from injury. In fact, when he returned from injury on April 23rd, he scored his only goal the rest of the season. April 21st. He had an assist on April 23rd, and then later had an assist against Columbus, and that's it. So he has been a non-factor, and I will be the first to say he has been a non-factor on the power play. He has been a non-factor 5-on-5. He's been a non-factor, which sometimes can be a good thing in his own defensive end. I don't watch a lot of plays where I'm saying, my goodness, why couldn't Elli Tolvanen get the puck out of the zone? Why couldn't Elli Tolvanen use his body? I'm not saying those things. I just don't notice them. He's just gone invisible. He's gone into the Colin Wilson witness protection program. I don't know where this guy is. But that doesn't mean that you should scratch Elli Tolvanen. And there's also, and we discussed this a little bit yesterday, some thoughts that Dante Fabbroe perhaps won't make the lineup. And again, Dante Fabbroe got injured, came back, probably hasn't been the same player since he got injured and came back. But I have a theory on this, which is sometimes you got to ride with the horse that got you there. The Nashville Predators do not make the playoffs if it's not for Elli Tolvanen, period. He saved their season. As much as we talk about UC Saros and Pekka and the performances they had, and goaltending was certainly a part of it. And when we talk about the young guys, people throw them all together. Tolvanen, Alexander Carrier, Tanner Jeannot, Matthew Olivier, Yakov Trenin, if you want to go there. And they say the young guys brought the energy on the team. The young guys that, Ellie Tolvanen. When you talk about the young guys, Ellie Tolvanen is the reason why the young guys revitalized this team. The Predators early in the season, when he couldn't crack the lineup, the Predators could not score, period. They couldn't do it. He gets into the lineup. There's a bit of an adjustment. All of a sudden, he starts scoring like crazy. And everybody, including myself, who questioned whether or not Ellie Tolvanen was going to be able to help this team at any point, questioned whether or not he was overrated as a prospect, started to open their eyes and say, okay, I think this guy can play. I think this guy's got some game. Now, again, he hasn't done much lately, but I view Ellie Tolvanen as a building block for the organization. Peter Laviolette, when he was coach, brought this up a bunch. And we all talk about the cup run and the President's Trophy. And the Predators hung banners at Bridgestone Arena in 2017, 2018, and 2019. There were no banners for 2016, no banners for 2015. In 2015, they had a higher seed than the Chicago Blackhawks, who won the Stanley Cup. They got the Blackhawks in the first round. They lost in six games. When you go back and you look at those six games, that was a very winnable series that the Predators lost. They knocked out Corey Crawford in game one. They blew a three-goal lead. They had a lead in game six. They blew that lead. They lost the series. Win those two games, you're on to the next round, and the Chicago Blackhawks are not hoisting up their third cup. But Peter Laviolette used to always talk about that playoff run, that one series loss to Chicago. And he used to always reference that and said, that's when this group, the group that went to the cup final in 17 and won the President's Trophy in 18, that was a big step for that group because that was when they learned. That was when they learned how to compete with the big boys come playoff time. Ellie Tolvanen may not be the best option for game one right now to give you the best chance to win game one versus the Carolina Hurricanes. Maybe it's Brad Richardson. And I can't believe we're actually having that discussion about Ellie Tolvanen or Brad Richardson, but maybe it is Brad Richardson. Put him in the bottom six, maybe move Matt Duchene up. Okay, fine. But what about Ellie Tolvanen? What about the growth that you want him to experience? What about going out there on the ice against the Carolina Hurricanes with everything on the table and seeing if the kid can play? In fact, I look at this and his tenure with the organization, and I think sometimes the organization is a little too afraid to just let him get out there. Remember in 2018, David Poile at the trade deadline, after Ellie Tolvanen had gone to the Olympics and lit it up with Jokerit in the KHL, he comes over. David Poile said, hey, I'm not going to make a big trade because I think I've got a top six forward in Ellie Tolvanen coming over when he signs. First round pick, he signs. He gets into a couple of games, doesn't crack the playoff roster. We all saw it. He wasn't ready. But then the next year, it was in Tolvanen's contract. He could refuse an assignment to Milwaukee. He could refuse an assignment to Milwaukee, and he could go back to the KHL. And if he does that, you lose him for that season. Now, he can come back over once that season's over, but if he's at Milwaukee, he can go up and down. And somehow they convinced him to go to Milwaukee and work on his game. Well, now at this point, I'm sitting here saying, okay, this superstar top six forward that you sold me on for a playoff run 2 years ago, now I expect him in the lineup. And he still didn't really get in the lineup. Didn't play in the bubble series. He was there. He was with the team in training camp, but he never really busted through. So then this year, it's like, all right, he's 21 years old. He's been on North American ice now for two full years. Now's the opportunity. And at the start of the season, they still didn't play him, and they were like, he's not ready. He saved their season when they had no choice. Guys got hurt. They couldn't score. They couldn't win. You had to see if somebody could do something. Tolvanen got out there and he did it. He is a building block for this team's future. He needs the experience of being out there. He also has the potential that we've all seen to score goals that nobody else on this team except maybe Forsberg has. And Forsberg does not have his shot. The power play, which has been abysmal for the last 3 years, was juiced up solely because of him. The other element of this, and this is, again, why I disagree with the decision, if this is what John Hines makes, and this involves both him and Fabbro, and that is the players know who they're better than. You can't sell a roster. You can't take two quarterbacks on a football team. One guy is clearly better than the other guy, and then go sell to that 53-man roster, hey, we're going to go with Johnny because we drafted him in the first round. Those guys don't want to hear it. The other guy also has a pretty good idea if he's better than somebody else. Eli Tolvanen, at the start of the season, was 21 years old. Dante Fabbro's 22. Those guys, and I'm not speaking for them, but I have a hard time believing that in general, that those kind of young guys can be sat down and told, hey, I know you played a huge role on our team, and I know that we invested a lot in you. Both are first-round picks. Both were highly touted prospects. Both were guys that, well, I guess in the case of Fabbro, they legitimately made room for. But we think that we'd rather roll Brad Richardson out there than roll you. We think we'd rather roll Eric Goodbranson or Ben Harper out there instead of you. And I'm just using what I believe in general is how most 22 or 21-year-olds would feel, which is some sort of a resentment towards whoever is telling them that. I've never been a parent, but I guarantee you there are times that kids look at their parents like they're crazy. It may be in the best interest of winning game one to sit Eli Tolvanen on the bench. Maybe. But is it in the best interest of the Predators? I brought this up with Dante Fabbro. This is a guy who you have believed in. You drafted him in the first round. You traded Sam Girard because you felt okay about your long-term defensive depth because of Dante Fabbro. You brought him up and played him in the 2019 playoffs fresh out of college. You traded PK Subban to make him a second-pair defenseman. And now you're going up to him, perhaps, and saying, well, Ben Harper is a better shot or has a different shot than you. Left shot, right shot. Eric Goodbranson, left shot, right shot. And he's going to listen to that and think that you still believe in him? And maybe Dante Fabbro and Eli Tolvanen are very mature. Maybe they are. Maybe they can listen to that and say, hey, the coach is doing what's in the best interest of the team for this game, and I understand it, and I'll be ready when my number's called. We all hope that's the case. But is that the case with most 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds? When you think of the long-term future of the Predators, and I'm not even sold on Fabbro long-term. Now, I've had people that have been in that organization who, when Fabbro was a pup, were like, oh my goodness, Dante Fabbro, he's just going to be awesome. And we haven't seen it yet. But for those two guys, don't we consider them the foundation for the future of the Predators? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I look at this series and I'm like, go have fun, guys. You're playing with house money. If you lose to Carolina in four or five games, we're still going to clap at the effort you guys gave this season. We're already proud of you. But don't we as fans, don't we want the Predators to be back in the contention for the President's Trophy and back in the contention for the Stanley Cup over the next couple of years? Don't we want, right now, we look at it and say, wow, Carolina, Tampa, Florida. If things get back to normal, won't we look at the rest of the Central Division and say, no, we want the Predators right there at the top, right there with Colorado, right there with maybe St. Louis, right there with Minnesota, right there with Chicago if they ever get back. That's what I want. That's what I expect in 2 or 3 years to be there. You need the young studs to become studs. And I just don't know if you do that by putting them on the bench. And I also worry about how they'll react to the news if they're told, hey, we'd like to roll Brad Richardson out there over you. We'd like to roll Rocco Grimaldi out there over you. We'd like to roll Eric Goodbranson out there over you. Everything in life is not a decision for the immediate future. Everything you do in life has a short-term consequence and a long-term consequence. And that's why if, in fact, John Hines is considering benching Eli Tolvanen, or I shouldn't say bench, I guess there's a negative connotation with that, scratching Eli Tolvanen or scratching Dante Fabbro, I disagree with it. But again, I'm not going to get on here and yell and shout and scream and call names like they do now, which is the new thing to do. I don't know if it's cable news. I don't know if it's social media. I don't know what it is, but that's the new thing, is to yell and scream and call names and all kinds. I'm not going to do that. I'm just saying I disagree with it. On the front end, first guessing, not second guessing, I disagree with it. I think they are your young building blocks for the future. I think these are the guys that if there are better days ahead, you want to carry you there. Ellie Tolvanen right now, and maybe Philip Tomasino, are the biggest hopes the Predators have at one day getting a big boy forward, because they're never going to be bad enough to draft one, and nobody else on the roster is going to be one. So I say they should play. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Your reaction to the John Hines comments today. Plus, I asked David Poile about the young guys and about Favreau and Tolvanen and them going out of the lineup, what David Poile had to say about that today. Because, again, it's the job of the general manager to look long-term for the team, not just short-term. But we'll also get Caroline's thoughts on it, Ian's thoughts on it, and your thoughts on it. 615-737-1025. Are they really considering benching Ellie Tolvanen? What do you think? 615-737-1025. Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Hey, Coach, your guys have talked probably for the last month or so at least about how they felt that they've already been in that playoff mentality and playing playoff hockey to try and clinch a spot. I know every team seems to raise their level at this time of the year, but how do you view that situation? Do you need to emphasize that anymore to your team? Do you feel like they're already there?
Well, I think it's really about preparing for the Carolina series. And part of it is understanding how we played, the mentality we play with, the consistency level that we played with. Not get too high, not get too low, but the readiness we need to be able to play with. And I think that's the focus. It's not so much what happened in the regular season. That's in the past. Both teams have a reset. Regular season's over. We both have the same amount of time to get ready for the series. So, you know, our focus has to be on not what happened. I think we've taken the lessons from that, but now it's an opportunity for us to get even better.
There you go, John Hines on the Carolina series. And again, today on Robbie and Rex Road, John Hines saying it will be a tough decision on Ellie Tolvanen, whether or not they scratch him, whether or not they play him. Again, on Tolvanen, one goal and two assists since coming back on April 21st. That was pretty much a month ago. That's 3 weeks ago. He's got one goal and two assists. I did ask, so now a lot of talk about Tolvanen and Favreau. I did ask David Poile today in his media availability. I asked David Poile about the idea of those guys, Favreau and Tolvanen, sitting on the bench. Here's what he said.
The coaches really have their hands full this year based on all the players that we've used. I mean, we have like 34 players here in Nashville. We've had basically 34 players here since before the trading deadline. When we got to the trading deadline, we had a roster of like 22 players, and then we had like 8 guys on IR. So we knew we were going to be at least 30 or more players. That's hard to balance on a daily basis for practices and keeping everybody happy. So I really do believe that the coaches have done a good job in that area. Having said that, there's no chance that we have everybody that's going to be totally 100% happy when the lineup is announced for game one. But as John has told the players on a consistent basis, especially in the second half of the season when we played our best hockey, is that the Predators are going to play a certain way, and who's ever in the lineup, we're going to continue to play that way. And because of the way we're going to play, we're going to continue to be successful. So my take on this, and what I think the messaging is to anybody who doesn't dress in game one, is that please work hard, be ready to go. This is a decision for one game. I think win or lose, no guarantees on this, but I would say our lineup for game two in Carolina will be different by 2 or 3 players. I just think that's the type of year that it's been. We're going to see something what we like when we play Carolina in game one, and something that we're not going to like. And there's going to be a player that's more suited to play or to make a change. And I think it's our depth that's actually put us in the playoffs with the change that we've made almost on a game by game basis. And it seems like every time we've had to put somebody new in the lineup, we've actually gotten stronger for it.
So I understand what he's saying, which is everybody's got to be ready every second their number may be called. And you go back to 2017, And there's something to that, right? Like Harry Zolnerchuk had a big goal in game two. Pontus Aberg had a big goal in the Western Conference final. Cody McLeod had a big goal against the St. Louis Blues. Vernon Fiddler had a big goal. I mean, they were rotating those bottom guys throughout the roster the entire 2017 run. And I get it, you know. Scott Hartnell was the guy, didn't play in the Winnipeg series, and then all of a sudden, facing elimination, Peter Laviolette sticks him in the lineup for game six. And he gave them the physicality they need. I get it. But it feels a little different when it comes to Ellie Tolvanen. What do you guys think of it? Caroline, we'll start with you.
I just think it's not very fair, especially considering who got the Predators to this point. The young guys. And I understand that Ellie Tolvanen was hurt during a long stretch of the Predators' success. But still, it's the young guys who got them to this point. It's the young guys who were scrappy and who were winning those games that needed to be won. So to take them out in the high stakes that these young guys got them to take the young guys out, it's not very fair that they don't get to reap the benefits of what they worked for.
Ian?
Well, this is a tough decision. You know, you got to go back and forth on it. You're going to have to weigh the pros and cons. The one thing I keep thinking about going back to is their tendency to talk about the physicality that they're going to need in this series.
Sure.
And that's the only thing that kind of leans me in the direction of, you know, him taking him out for somebody with a more physical edge, you know, whether that's Richardson or Cousins. That would be my only thing. But he is a weapon, that's for sure, that they don't really have. And they're going to need something on the power play.
And he's the best thing they have on the power play. For me, the hope that he gets it figured out is worth rolling the dice and putting him in there. But I do understand what Ian's saying, and I thought about this. Here's how I consider the lineup. I consider Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, Yarncroke, Granlund, Halla, Cunnan, and the Hurd line all in. Like, they're locks, they're in. So all those guys are in.
Yep.
So then it comes down basically to Tolvanen, Cousins, Richardson, Rocco, and Arvidsson. Brad Richardson might be the worst hockey player of that group, and he might be the best fit in this series against Carolina because he's 6 foot 190. You know, Rocco is listed at 5'6", 180. Now, I'm going to tell you guys this. Rocco Grimaldi is not 180 pounds. If Rocco Grimaldi is 180 pounds, then I'm 300 pounds because there is no way. That's just me. No way. Like Arvidsson, 5'9", 180. I just don't believe that. But Richardson's listed at 6 foot 190, and he's by far the biggest, and they've been playing Brad Richardson a lot lately, which makes me think that they want Brad Richardson for exactly what Ian was talking about. So I understand that decision. I just, again, to me, it's like a pros and a cons thing. Like, let's, before we take, you know, the who would you put in there, who would you take out of there, if we were to say, okay, what are the pros of sitting Ellie Tolvanen? I think the biggest pro is that whatever they're asking him to do that he's not doing, they have more time to work with him or more of a punishment to get him to do whatever it is John Hines was alluding to this morning that he's not doing. I think another pro would be that, to Ian's point, you can get a more physical player, whether it's Cousins at 5'11", 185, or Richardson at 6 foot 190, and both guys have more experience. Richardson won a cup in 2012. You know, those guys are in the lineup, and we would agree that they've got to be more physical with Carolina. They cannot go up and down the ice with Carolina and expect to win. And those are your pros. But I want to get to cons first, and then I'll get to what you want to say. To me, the cons are Tolvanen has a shot that nobody else on this team has. Like, in hockey, the key is to score goals. I don't want to sound like Joe Morgan, you know, analyzing a baseball game. May he rest in peace. But the key here is to score goals, and Ellie Tolvanen can do it. And I know he hasn't done it lately, but he can do it. Brad Richardson can't do it. Nick Cousins can't do it. Rocco, he can do it, but, you know, whatever. Tolvanen can score, and Tolvanen's a factor on the power play. These other guys are not a factor on the power play. And you're going to have to score on the power play. You're going to have to kill off penalties in order to win. And then the second thing is, again, if you're thinking long-term for the Preds franchise, if you're thinking long-term, I think you want Tolvanen to get the experience of being out there. So to me, the cons of not playing him outweigh the pros of what you would get if he was on the bench, and that's why I'd go with Tolvanen.
And I agree with you that the Predators absolutely positively do need Ellie Tolvanen on the power play. And I see what you guys are both saying about the physicality, because the Hurricanes are a physical team.
Well, they're a fast team, so you just want to rough them up.
Right. And I know that Ellie Tolvanen, he's what, 5'10", 180?
Yeah, he's not very
fast. He's not very big, but I don't think he plays like his size. I think he plays like he's a big guy. I don't think he's afraid to get in the middle of things and be a more physical player.
I have to disagree. I can't put him on a bottom six. I mean, if it were that simple, then you would just, you know, knock off a guy in the bottom six and say, okay, you go out there and go in. They have the luxury that they can move Eric Haller, Matt Duchene, or Victor Arvidsson to a top six role. I don't think you can move Tolvanen into the bottom six. And they think they tried that. You know, Ian, I want to say like Laviolette's in 2019.
He was on the third line.
They tried him, and it just didn't. I mean, there are just some guys. Like Kevin Fiala's not a bottom six forward. Craig Smith's not a bottom six forward. He's not a bottom six forward. He's just not a bottom six guy. So you're moving, if you take him out, you're probably moving, I'm guessing, Arvidsson up to that first line.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Cunnan up to that first line, and you're putting Brad Richardson in the bottom six. And I just personally don't love it. So, again, like I said, in cable news, you disagree with somebody, you know, you call them stupid, or you yell at them, or you talk down, or, you know, make personal insults. I'm not saying that with John Hines if he goes ahead and scratches Tolvanen and Fabbro in game one. I'm just saying I guess I disagree with it. We'll get to your reaction on this next. 615-737-1025. Plus, something kind of telling that David Poile said today. Maybe we'll get to that as well. 615-737-1025. I will say this. It is a nice knowing where the Predators were and knowing where we were as a country and as a society and as a world a year ago. It is very nice and very convenient to be sitting here today and arguing about who should be in and who should be out of the lineup. Because it didn't look like this team was going to the playoffs. And a year ago today, who knew what was going to happen? So I am just so thrilled that here we are arguing about the lineup. It's like, let's
it's
take a second.
A good problem to have.
Right. On this Fireball Hot Take Friday, let's take a second to be thankful of where we are. No more mask mandate in the city of Nashville compared to where we were 1 year ago. Listen to The Game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's The Game's 1K payday presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It's not perfect for younger players, like you mentioned, Tolvanen, and if he wasn't a player, Fabbro, since they've been out, you know, at different games. But they're going to get their chance, and it could be game one and maybe game two, but they're going to get their chance. They have to be ready. So I think we've come so far with our younger players and, you know, specifically a guy like Tolvanen, that he knows that he's in our plans for the future. We're just looking for more consistency from him. He was really hot there for a while. He unfortunately had an injury that was out. He was out for 7-8 games. And I think, in all due respect to him, he hasn't come back quite as strong. And sometimes you just need a game or so to get your act back together. So I think regardless of what names you're going to throw out there that may not play in game one, I think a roster probably could shift from game to game. And we're prepared and we're used to using different players. And we think one of the depth of our organization right now might be one of the keys to the series, especially if it's a 7-game series.
There you go. That was David Poile. And again, they talk about depth and depth for a series. I'm okay with it if it's Pontus Aberg. I'm okay with it if it's Austin Watson. I'm okay with it if it's, I don't want to say the herd line because those guys have been really important, but again, you know, bottom six forwards, you want to shuffle a guy in, hey, we need more speed. Okay, that's one thing. Yeah, you try to sell me that you want to go with Eric Gabranson over Dante Fabbro, and I have a little bit of a hard time getting there. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline Fenton is on the text line. Caroline, what do we have in there?
Shane from Ashland City said, I think they play, but I think this is a message, hoping they listen to the media and hear the message and they play hard.
So is hard the issue here? I mean, I could be wrong. Is hard the issue? And you tell me.
I don't know what the issue is. I don't know if it's just sheer size that John Hines is just doesn't want small guys out there and would rather just have big physical guys rather than maybe more skilled shooters. Sure. Or better players in the power play. But I don't think that effort is the issue with Elli Tolvanen.
What about with Fabbro? I just think the problem with Fabbro is that he just hasn't gotten good. Like, I think everybody's been waiting for Fabbro to get good, and he just hasn't gotten good. And so if you're waiting and waiting and waiting for forever for somebody to be good and they just never get good, at some point you get a little frustrated. And I kind of feel like that's where the Predators are with Dante Fabbro.
Yeah, and that's tough with such a young guy because he's a lot more unpredictable than any of your older veteran players out there. So it's a tough call. You know, I don't think it's effort from either of them. I think it's either experience level or size or, like you said, just, you know, we're just waiting for Dante Fabbro to have his moment, to have that time where he really just breaks through and you see, okay, now he is a professional hockey player. But I think that if you were to choose one of the two to put out on the ice, I would choose Elli Tolvanen.
So I don't think you have to choose. I think that that would be, I think they're independent of one another in this case. I certainly think that they believe more in Tolvanen than they do in Fabbro. I think that is pretty obvious to me. And I don't love Fabbro. I know that everybody sits there and you know, there's a lot of talk about Dante Fabbro. I don't love Fabbro. I think he makes way too many mistakes, which bothers me a lot. You know, the amount of mistakes that I feel like they make bothers me. But again, I'm thinking long-term here. I'm thinking long-term for the Predators. What else is in the text line?
Another texter texted in and said, I think Johansson will revive that 2017 playoff form that he had when he shut down Toews.
Jonathan Taves. Taves. I would argue that that's wishful thinking. You know, maybe, but again, I think that's wishful thinking. And I don't live in a world where we just sit there and say, you know, I think that Matt Duchene is going to go out there and play as well as he played in 2019 when he was with the Columbus Blue Jackets and they upset the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, that Matt Duchene is going to go out there and he is going to be the same caliber of player. I just don't believe in that. You know, the hope is not a strategy, and I've dealt with it for a long time because I feel like Titan fans have done that for forever on certain things. Like, oh, no, I believe Corey Davis is really – no, Corey Davis is what he is. And I'm not saying that Johansson can't be better because I think he can, and I think that they've challenged him to be better, and I think they've challenged Matt Duchene to be better. But at the same time, I don't – the idea that he's going to go out there and shut down Sebastian Aho and that group like he did Jonathan Taves in the Blackhawks series is, in my opinion, wishful thinking.
Another texter texted in and said they play Elli. Coach is just motivating him by saying he needs to step up. We traded Girard because we already had a small D-man and had more depth in the pipeline. Now, I had that same kind of mindset with Matt Duchene because I thought that that's what John Hines was doing, was like, look, you are
trying to motivate him.
Yes, like you are not delivering at the level that we need you to, so we're going to put you on the bench until you get there. And then the next game, he scored 2 goals. I don't think that this is a motivation kind of thing for John Hines.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's just a, you're not getting the job done and I need to be more physical against Carolina, so that's what I'm going to do?
I think it's more of just a strategic decision. Like, look, hey, these games, every single game matters. We need to steal a game at Carolina. And if you haven't been proving yourself at the level that we need you to produce, then you're not going to play. And I don't think that's to motivate him. I think that's just, hey, we need our best, most physical guys out there.
Perhaps. I think that they're, I don't think, motivating is the issue. I think they're
right. I agree. I don't think motivating is the issue.
It's like if it's baseball, I use baseball as an example. Like eventually if a guy can't, even if he's a top prospect and he can't hit, then you got to maybe move him down in the lineup. And hockey's different because, as I've said, I don't think Elli Tolvanen is a bottom six forward. Mm-hmm. He cannot play on the bottom six. That's not his style. But at the same time, to use the baseball analogy, you're not sitting Mike Trout on the bench, even if Mike Trout is not hitting the ball.
Right.
You're not sitting one of your guys that you really believe in, that you think is a star. You're not sitting that guy on the bench. You will not do that. And that's what it kind of feels like to me they're doing. And I say this again because I feel like they have hyped up Elli Tolvanen so much over the years and how much they believe in him. And we just played that Poile clip about how much they believe in him, that to me, I have an issue with the idea of not playing him. That's it for me. Is again, if he's one of your guys, if he's one of your long-term guys, I think he gets out there. I still, maybe here's the difference between me and Ian threw this to me before the show. He and I were just talking. And so, Ian, I'm kind of stealing your take here, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
And that is that with these hockey guys, they just look at the playoffs like, once you get in the playoffs, let's see what happens. And so even though I think it's a bad idea to sit these young guys because of what it may mean for their careers, they probably look at it like, hey, this might be the only shot I get at the playoffs, so I'm going to put my best lineup in there for the only shot I get. And I understand. I don't agree, but I understand, if that makes any sense.
I'm with you. I don't agree with the decision. If I were John Hines, I would put Ellie Tolvanen out there, but I'm just trying to make sense of the decision.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back to your Preds thoughts, your Preds text. And by the way, the state of North Carolina is clearly worried about the Predators. I cannot believe that. We will get to that. Jason Fitz will join us next, ESPN Radio. We'll get his thoughts. A lot of news in the NFL. The Titans, the schedule is out. What does Fitz think of the Titans after the schedule dropping? We'll do that next. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we are streaming on the Game Nashville app. Fireball Hot Take Friday. NHL playoffs start for the Predators. Oh, start on Monday. You know, it was just yesterday that Jason Fitz was doing the morning show every single morning on ESPN Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game here. And Fitz was spending 4 hours at a time talking about the NHL. Now he works for ESPN and does not do that. Jason Fitz joins us now, presented by Blood Assurance here on Stillman and Company. So, Fitzy, I want to start with this, and then we'll get to some football. Now that ESPN is acquiring the rights, the top rights to the NHL, do you think that you guys will cover hockey more now in the future?
1,000%. And that there's proof of concept on that. Look, nobody was talking about MMA until we struck a deal with UFC on ESPN, right? And now it's a constant conversation. I can tell you this, and I'll be like, you know me, I'll always pull back the curtain on the way ESPN works. I put my name in, given my background and my love of hockey, I put my name in to try and get some work in that space. And there are so many prominent people at ESPN trying to get hockey work that I can't even get past the first cut. Like, That's how many hockey fans there are at Bristol, and that's how many people are just desperately coming in and saying, nope, we have hockey back, I want to cover it. So, you know, it's going to be given more equity than anyone can possibly imagine right now, and I think by this time next year, we will just be slamming ESPN Radio and ESPN TV with one night of the NBA playoffs, the next night of the NHL playoffs, and that will run 3 months of our coverage.
That's crazy. I honestly thought it was going to be the other way around. Like, I thought it was going to be, hey, you know, it's basketball and ESPN's got more basketball and basket. Like, I understand that basketball is very popular around the country. For me, I struggle with this new NBA. You know, I do. And there are games on and we're betting them on the show and all kinds of stuff. And if it's not LeBron, like, I'm not sure I'm interested at all. And in the regular season, I mean, I don't even think the players in the NBA play that hard during the regular season. This is just me. I mean, obviously, I'm in a hockey market, and if I went somewhere else, maybe my tune changes. I don't know. But I just think that the average person has the love for the NBA has probably dropped a little bit. How do you view that?
Yeah, you're right. I think it depends on the age group you're in. You know, I will tell you that the digital shows on the NBA do really well, and SportsCenter on Snapchat, which has a couple million kids that watch it every day. The number one topic that SportsCenter on Snapchat wants covered is the NBA, and it's not even close. You go to the NFL on Snapchat, they will click right through it. We've watched the metrics on it. So young people want dunk highlights. They want, but to your point, like, they want to see individuals do incredible things. They don't really care about regular season games. And I think that part of the problem is, frankly, the way so many people that talk about the NBA have decided it's championship or nothing in everything we do. So suddenly greatness, like what, you know, Russ has done in averaging a triple-double, just doesn't really seem to matter, because unless you do it in the playoffs, nobody wants to have that conversation. So I think for a lot of people, because we've been, you know, sort of drilling into everyone's minds for years that regular season accomplishment doesn't matter at all, people are just out on regular season basketball. So I don't think you're wrong about that at all. And frankly, if the Lakers get bounced early in this playoff, the numbers are going to show it. I mean, the worst-case scenario for the league is getting Phoenix versus Milwaukee, as much as I'd love it in the NBA final.
Jason Fitz is our guest, presented by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. Fitz, how much do you put stock into the schedule release? Not in terms of the importance, because I think it's fun for everybody, but how much does it move the needle in the NFL? For example, I pulled the Titans schedule and the Colts schedule, and I think they're somewhat even in terms of the difficulty at certain points. Last year, I thought the Colts had a way easier beginning to their schedule that maybe should have set them up for success. But the Titans have a murderer's row of Buffalo, Kansas City on a short week after Monday Night Football, at Indy, at the Rams on Sunday Night Football versus New Orleans. Indy kind of has that at the top of their schedule versus Seattle, versus the Rams, at the Titans, at Miami, at Baltimore. How much do you put in when the schedule comes out of then deciding how that will affect your team season?
I think they're, like, you made a great point about short weeks. Short weeks matter a lot. Also, I think one of the smarter things that, you know, has really been eye-opening for me is the way we need to look at the schedule, particularly around young quarterbacks. So, you know, if you're the Titans, you certainly would rather have the Jets in week four than have the Jets in week 14 if the theory is that Zach Wilson is going to get better as the season goes on. Same, I'd say the same with Trevor Lawrence. Like, you want to get some of these young quarterbacks as early as possible. So I do think that there's some element to that that can sort of be a talking point for the schedule. And other than that, there's so many variables. Like, just being honest, man, like, I know that we blew up schedule release is a huge, huge, huge deal, and I understand it, but hell, we don't even know what team Aaron Rodgers is going to be on by this fall. As much as I think he's going to be a Packer, like, if he's not a Packer, then everybody's going to look at the Packers schedule completely different. So the number of variables from player movement to injury makes it hard for me to put too much stock in it, because, you know, conversely, how many teams do we think might be good? Like the Saints, do we know if the Saints are going to be any good without Drew Brees? No, we're just guessing.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that, because there are two games on the Titans schedule that I look at those teams and I'm like, you know, versus New Orleans, I'm not, you know, I'm kind of torn on New Orleans. I think Sean Payton's a great coach, and I think he'll be a great coach without Drew Brees. Jameis Winston is their starting quarterback. Do I look at the New Orleans Saints and think, oh my God, New Orleans? Probably not. And then late in the year, in December, they play at Pittsburgh. I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be very good this year, Fitz. And I think by late December, we'll know Pittsburgh's not going to be very good. I chalk that up as a win for the Titans. Whereas if you play Pittsburgh in September, perhaps Ben doesn't have the wear and tear on him of the whole season. Perhaps Pittsburgh thinks they're still a title contending kind of team. I think that's a big get for the Titans to have Pittsburgh late in the year.
Yeah, you're 1,000% right. We agree on Pittsburgh. I mean, I'll say this. I don't think Pittsburgh is even close to being a playoff team. And by the end of this year, Pittsburgh's going to have the fourth best quarterback in their division. So, you know, that to me, and that's not so much a hot take on how great everybody else is going to be. It's just, I don't think Ben's got a lot left in the tank. And no matter what they think they're going to get out of Najee Harris, like, running backs don't immediately equate wins for most teams in the NFL. So, you know, I just don't think the Steelers have given themselves the weapons they're going to need to be super competitive in that division. And you're right, by the time they hit December, I think the Steelers are going to be looking around and saying, okay, do we really even want to win games now? Like, what are we trying to accomplish if Ben's got even a slightly sore, you know, butt cheek? Is he going to just sit out the game? I mean, you're 1,000% right. I'm all out on the Steelers this year as a team. I think they're a 6-win team at best. So, you know, I'd rather have them late in the year when the wheels have fallen off completely. And you know, you've got a couple of games late in the season, like the 49ers. If the 49ers are not a Super Bowl contender, will they have turned everything over to Trey Lance? And if that's the case, boy, that looks a lot different than Jimmy G with the 49ers does early in the year. So, you know, I think there's a few instances where the end of the schedule really gives the Titans the opportunity to get on a roll.
The Colts schedule, one thing that stands out to me, a couple things. First off, how nuts is the NFL? The last Titans-Colts game of the season is week 8 on Halloween. And I mean, that week 18 is always supposed to be divisional teams to have good matchups. And the Titans play at the Texans and the Colts play at the Jags. What is the league smoking?
Yeah, and I thought that was one of the biggest surprises with the way they did it. Because the Texans, we have no idea. There are bigger things in football, and I've got to stress that, more important things with Deshaun Watson than what's going on in football. And that's to figure out what's going on with all of these allegations. That's the most important thing. But it's impossible right now to look at the Texans and feel like they're going to be any good. And the Jaguars, you know, are a fun story because everybody loves Trevor Lawrence, but there's literally zero proof of concept that they'll be anything other than a little better than they were last year as they try and figure it out. So I thought that was a huge miss by the league. And frankly, they have an obligation in that Week 18 schedule to give themselves the best matchups possible, especially with flexing going on. And I feel like they did that in several instances. It really, they had a mind around, are we putting good teams with good teams? But there were a few really surprising matchups, and that's one of them. You know, I think they made a statement about how good they think the Dolphins are going to be, for example, by giving us Patriots-Dolphins instead of Patriots-Bills at the end of the year. But this one made no sense to me, and I put the Colts against the Titans.
Last one for you, Jason Fitz, presented by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. How big of a factor is Eric Fisher signing with the Colts, and how big of a factor is the front end of their schedule, Seattle, the Rams, at the Titans, at Miami, at Baltimore, and then they get Houston, who stinks, at San Francisco versus the Titans, knowing that Eric Fisher is coming off of a torn Achilles?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing with Eric Fisher. If Eric Fisher is at all healthy, it's a great, great, great signing. We have zero idea if that's going to be the case. So while I think that Eric Fisher by the end of the year could be a great get for the Colts and something they should be really excited about, that presumes everything goes well in recovery for somebody that's already a large, large man trying to recover from Achilles injury. So hard for me to take much into account there. I mean, everything for the Colts is going to come down to how quickly Carson Wentz becomes either the Carson Wentz he has been recently or the Carson Wentz he was last year, which would be the biggest regret. I think the Colts are in a situation where they'll start particularly slow and then they'll have the opportunity to end fast. They have a lot of winnable games down the stretch. So this to me is a two-horse team, two-horse race in this division between the Colts and the Titans. But the Titans should clearly, in my mind, clearly be the AFC South favorite, and they should be in that conversation with the upper echelon of the AFC. Like, there should be heavy expectations and heavy pressure on Vrabel to deliver with a better defense, because the window is right now for the Titans.
Yeah, I lied. Last one for you. How dialed into the Preds-Kane series are you going to be?
I'll watch it. You know, that's the best. I honestly have to make hard decisions, and you can appreciate this, about how much time to spend as a fan and how much time to spend as an analyst right now.
Sure.
And to be real, like I will never lie to everybody about how much NBA we have to watch in my mind to do my job well. So if Spain and Fitz ends up being preempted next week for a bunch of NBA play-in games, then I'm going to put my feet up, enjoy a few alcoholic beverages, and watch the hockey I've been missing all year. But if I have to put my head deep dive into the NBA stuff, it's hard for me to balance both.
I think everybody who has a job in America can appreciate that. Jason Fitz, as always, presented by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. Happy birthday to Sonny, by the way. Just want to get that out there, Fitzy. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate you, my friend. Have a great week.
Yep, that Fitzy joining us on the program. By the way, he's talking about all those digital shows at ESPN that everyone loves NBA. I have heard. Now, I don't know anybody who currently works in digital at ESPN. But
I know a few.
I have heard that Stillman & Company is getting literally, what was it, more than some of these ESPN shows?
A few of them, yes. And while the lovely people who work on the digital shows back at ESPN love them dearly, they work very hard. I've heard they're great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're getting on their tails. I think they're getting nervous about us.
Stillman & Company getting more views. I mean, I'll say this. There's not another afternoon show in town that's getting close to us in terms of digital views. But now that I hear that we're getting to ESPN, I ain't got no problem with that.
Yes, I appreciate y'all watching.
615-737-1025 Fireball Hot Take Friday. Speaking of on their heels, the governor of North Carolina. I'm not Bill O'Reilly, but we've got to discuss what the governor of North Carolina did to the Predators. That's next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.